Na 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 na. Hey, gotta love that podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey, yeah, I love that podcast show. Oh, BS and beer is the place to go to get all the Saints news. Hell yeah, podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey, gotta love that podcast show. Na na.
Now, recording live, it's the BS and Beer Podcast crew with your host, David Romero.
Welcome in another week, another edition. It's the BS and Beer Podcast crew recording live, wall-to-wall New Orleans Saints football talk from our studios at Meat House. The New Orleans Saints drop a head scratcher to the New York Giants. 21-27, was it? They didn't have to kick the extra point in overtime. With me today, Heath Elson-San, Wesley Coleman. So grab a drink, sit back and relax, because for the next hour or so, we'll be doing New Orleans Saints football, BS and beer style. Gentlemen, welcome. How are you guys doing? Heath, how's everything?
It's good, man. I'm doing good. How are you?
You recovered from, we were talking about it on Sunday and I don't know. I think it's just getting older and the losses don't really hurt as much as they used to. So I'm not mad, but I do have some bones to pick Wesley, welcome back. Missed you last couple of weeks, but we're looking forward to some of your insight, and I'm sure you have a whole gamut of stats and insightful information to bring to the show, right?
Happy to be here. I'm exhausted from, I actually went to the game. So we've had a lot of traveling the last few days, and I might have some different things that I didn't see or did see because of being at the game. So I there's some replays I didn't see and some different observations.
Unfortunately, there were replays we didn't see either.
Yeah. We were talking about that during the game. It was just kind of irritating because it's like, I would see this or that. And I'm like waiting for they hardly showed any replays on the broadcast.
Yeah.
But Wesley, before I get into my opening topic, you said something on the Dome Patrol's instant reaction show about the coaching and things that you normally, it's a timeout, getting a beer, you saw some things or looked specifically for some things that you don't normally look for.
Yeah, I can say I've never been at the game and watched or cared where any of the coaches were standing ever. Besides maybe Peyton every once in a while, see if he's yelling at somebody. But I specifically watched in this game when the offense comes off the field, and this is referring back to a couple weeks ago when we had 12 offensive coaches and we went down to only five. And I think we were all like, why do you need 12 offensive coaches? Between offensive series, when the offensive players are on the sideline, there are two guys huddled around the starting quarterback and the backup quarterbacks are there too. And they're constantly showing them stuff on screens and talk to them. There is two coaches that are with the wide receivers. There was a coach with the tight ends, and there was two coaches with the running backs and two with the offensive linemen. And I mean, they are talking the entire time. None of the offensive starters are on the sideline watching the game at all. They are constant. It's not like, well, they just had a quick conversation like, oh, okay, let's do this next time. Okay, let's go support our teammates.
Yeah.
The entire time until the other team is punting, they are in meetings. I mean, as long as they can. And it just kind of, I was hoping that we were going to win this game. And then I was going to come out of that with like, oh, I've got this excuse for why we're 3-1. We didn't have all those coaches. And those are important. When we lost this game, I kind of lost the steam to even talk about it too much, but it made, it was definitely a different angle of the game that I've never tried to pay attention to before.
You know what? And when you said that is profound to me, because quite frankly, when it's a timeout, that's when I'm doing anything other than, talking about what we're going to eat after the game. And when you said that, I'm like, wow, after the issues we had against Carolina, it was interesting that you actually focused on that. Now, let me get to the opening thought that I had about this game. And going into it, I heard predictions. I read Twitter. I read forums. And people talking about how we were going to blow the Giants out. And for the life of me, I would just sit there and I'm like, man, I'd love for it to happen. And, I do kind of expect to win. But by no stretch of the imagination do I think that the Saints were going to blow the Giants out. First of all, if you watch the Giants play, I'm not at all trying to imply that they're a great team or a good team and some bad luck, or but they were in all their games. And the fact of the matter in the NFL, it's a small margin between winning and losing, and we learned that on Sunday. Okay, so what I'm trying to say is I always looked at Drew Brees as the great equalizer. Didn't matter who was injured, Drew Brees was the guy that why we would just beat up on a bad team. Drew Brees is not on our team anymore. And while I think Jameis Winston had the best game he's had as a Saint, he's not Drew Brees. But let's also say, okay, prior to the season, we knew Drew Brees wasn't going to be here. But what we'd say is on offense, yeah, you know, we're going to have Michael Thomas and we're going to have, you know, Smith. He's always injured, but we have some, we don't have those guys, okay? Now we have a bunch of undrafted free agents. And I'd also like to say there are guys like Callaway, who I'm like, yeah, let me see him do it first before I think he's going to be a nice player when guys like Smith and Thomas actually come back. And I know this was kind of, I'm presenting this, it's going a long way, but I really want to paint this picture. Then Harris, who's, you know, I was saying last week he was our best receiver and it just keeps proving out. It's just because of his size and his build. You don't see him. He's not getting the snaps that everybody. Now, I haven't looked at the snaps this week. We might find that he's getting more. And the Saints are actually running the ball and really committing to run the ball. You're not really going to have a 5'6" guy out there blocking for the majority of the plays. And it's the same reason why I think you're not seeing Juwan Johnson. But let me get back to it. We looked at our offensive line. We hang our hat on Armstead, McCoy, and Ramchek. And then two guys that, while they might have some holes, we were hoping that the rookie Ruiz would step up in his second year, and there's reason to expect it. And Pete, while he has his faults, he also has his strong points. He can do things very well. But now when you take out McCoy and you take out Armstead, you're basically left with an offensive line that's, believe me, and I think you guys would agree, prior to the season, if this was your starting lineup, you would not be super excited saying, they're the reasons we're going to win. So the receivers are gone. The offensive line is nowhere near what we expect it to be. On defense, you lose an Alexander, Davenport, and I'm missing someone. Oh, Onyemata. What in the world makes you think that the Saints are going to roll the ball out and wipe the floor with really anybody with the team that we're rolling out on the field? So I just found it to be living in the past. I think the Saints have to earn it. But having said that, and I'll start with you, Heath, after my long dissertation here, they still controlled the game. And in the fourth quarter, I wrote down how much time was left. I don't know where it is. 12 minutes at 9 minutes and 24 seconds. They had a 21-10
11-point lead. Yeah.
11-point lead.
Yep.
I mean, go ahead, take over.
Yeah. I mean, look, I didn't expect the Saints to necessarily blow out the Giants, but I went into the game pretty confident that the Saints were going to win.
Yeah,
you know, in fact, I think I even predicted, I think this was on our text message and whatever. I think I threw out 31-10 or something like that. That's pretty much, you know. So I guess in reality, I did predict them blowing out the Giants to some extent. But and I think me, like probably most Saints fans, part of that goes back to what I saw in week one, right? I'm thinking to myself somewhere in the back of my head, I'm like, wow, this team, you know, they certainly have the capability, because we were missing all those same people in week one, you know, with the exception of Armstead. Now, of course, I conveniently forgot about week two. but be that as it may, or week three. It was week two.
You're right, Carolina.
Okay. But anyway. but, yeah, look, I mean, ultimately, that's not really what cost us this game, you know. And just like you just said, I mean, the Saints were moving the ball at will all the way up until an inopportune mistake. And those mistakes were made both by the players and the coaching staff, which I know we're going to get into here in a little bit. But, you know, I think looking back on it, I mean, I think we had the ball 10 minutes longer than them in the game. I mean, you know, we were able to run the ball. We had 170 yards rushing this game, you know.
Statistically, look at the stats and
I mean, the one stat that jumps out at you and was part of the, you know, on the defensive side of the ball was the 402 yards passing or whatever it was to Daniel Jones. But you know, offensive. I mean, look, the Saints played well enough to win, and that's evident by the fact they walked by 11 points with 8 minutes and something left in the game, right? I mean, they just had a collapse going down the stretch, and then you could look back earlier in the game and say, well, if they hadn't had this mistake, they'd have been up by another seven, or if they had done this, they'd have had three even more, or, you know, and here, and we're going to go into some of those in more specifics, but yeah, you know, I don't think we should necessarily expect the Saints to be blowing people out, but I really did go into this game confident that this was going to be a win.
As much criticism as I gave in my opening thoughts, I expected them to win. I just knew it would be a more of a challenge. Actually, I thought it would be very similar to what was happening till about, what did I say there? 9 minutes or so. Wesley, I'm going to throw in another element here. It's the same question. I want to get your general overview thoughts of, you know, expecting the Saints to win. I think that the Green Bay game in the season opener changed people's perspective. I think all of us went into the offseason and we're like, you know, man, you know, if we win 10 games, man, that's a good season. We're kind of in a transition. I wouldn't call it a rebuild by any stretch of the imagination, but we still have a bunch of holes. And all of a sudden we go to Green Bay, or Green Bay comes to town and we dismantle them. All of a sudden those expectations go through the roof. And so now I think we're kind of settling back in, but people still have that in their mind. So they living in the glory days based on what happened in week one, when in reality, I already threw week two out. So Heath, you brought that up, but I think we officially as a podcast threw week two out. So yeah. The last 2 weeks have kind of demonstrated that, you know, we were all super successful in week one, but it was the same game plan for week one, three, and four.
Yeah, and maybe that's a little obvious to do the same game plan. I mean, even against one of the worst teams in the league, it's one thing when it surprises Green Bay and it works. But then when you roll it out and try it over and over again, I mean, these are professional NFL teams, and the worst teams are still made up with, you know, of professionals. And they got coaches that can, you know, make a few adjustments. You know, having said that, just general thoughts on this game. I think with every game, we can get into the minutia of nitpicking things that went wrong and all that. This game comes down to me real clearly. You've already referenced, we're up 21-10. And then you look at what happened after that. We get the ball up 21-10. We run the ball three times in a row. Mm-hmm. We punt because we get 8 yards. The next time we get the ball, we have the ball for seven plays. We get 33 yards. We run the ball four of those seven plays. The other three, we get a delay of game, but then the other three, Jameis Winston completes two of three passes. Without the delay of game, we're at a first down, but Jameis didn't have a bad game. I think that Sean Payton got super comfortable in this, thought we're up 11, we're better than this team, our defense is playing pretty good. And then you throw in a 58-yard blown play to the running back who doesn't line up as a wide receiver very much ever for them. I mean, there's a lot of like that play kind of sits off, but we gave up on this game. Like Sean Payton got real comfortable. We're up 11. We ran the ball on 10 of 13 plays and we gave them the ball back too many times. I mean, it's just pretty, I mean, I don't want to make it more difficult. And there's a lot of things I'm sure we'll get into where I think other things that where we could have also won this game, but it looked like we got way too comfortable at the end.
Well, you know what? I think you put it best. That's a great way to, and I don't think it's just Peyton, but he is obviously also a big part of this with the play calling and what have you. I think the defense got a little bit comfortable. Marshawn Lattimore got a little comfortable, and you may or may not. Cause when I saw this statistic, it slapped me in the face. I didn't realize it at the time that New York had one play 50 plus yard drives. So basically we spend the whole game working our tail off to get in a position to run the clock, to run the ball, you know, do all the things that, you know, the cliches, you know, we control the line of scrimmage. And then you finally, you get a score and you're like, yeah, okay, we worked so hard. And then you give up 50 plus yard one play drives, two of them in one game. I don't know if I've ever seen that before. And so it just shows that there's some complacency slipped in, and it's perplexing. I don't know what to say about it. I wish I had something profound to say about it. But at the end of the day, I think you just nailed it. At some point, it just felt like at cruise control.
Something I agree with you on too that I want to definitely point out. I know Jameis Winston threw 5 touchdowns in the first game against the Packers. This was his best game.
Oh, yes.
He started off a little slow, first couple passes. He looked great after that. I mean, it ended up 17 of 23. And also another thing that I think makes a difference in this game, instead of Taysom Hill having 3 passes that totaled 9 yards, let's give those same 3 passes to Jameis. Oh, sorry, 9 yards and an interception.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Let's give Jameis those three plays. And I think, again, a different game, which I'm starting to get really frustrated with the Taysom thing. I'm sure we'll get into that. But I also think that those being cute, making sure he got 3 passes could have cost us the game too. This went into overtime. I know we lost by 6. This game went into overtime. So it came down to a couple of plays.
Yeah. The Taysom Hill thing, it wasn't where I intended to go. First, I want to say, Winston, and correct me if I'm wrong, either one of you, what struck me the most is the complete lack of crap plays. I don't recall one. Every game has one where it's just like, oh, come on, man, don't do that, you know. And he didn't have that.
Not a one.
And look sharp. And listen, you know, incompletions, yes. In situations where that's what we want, because now the narrative is starting to be, and I didn't like it. Heath and I talked about this on Sunday. Did Coach Payton break Winston by fixing him? And I'm like, I don't like that. But then you have to give it some consideration. That is Winston holding the ball in times he should let it go. That being said, there were times when he threw the balls incomplete, but there wasn't nothing there. So he made a great decision. Just throw the ball in the dirt or, you know, uncatchable pass that nobody can get to unless the receiver makes an amazing, but no, oh crap moments that we've seen a few of. And again, I do think that Jameis Winston's under a spotlight. So some of his oh crap moments are only oh crap when it's Jameis Winston. If it was anybody else, it's just like, oh, I mean, Breeze does the same thing. It's, oh, he's amazing. I can't believe he fitted in that tight window. Jameis does it. And it's, oh my God, this guy, he's Tampa Bay Jameis. And it's kind of unfair, but I think if he continues to play the way he is, and I guess there's a question coming here, and I'll start with you, Wesley. Is it time for Peyton to loosen the reins up a little bit? I mean, again, listen, part of the reason why Jameis has 8 touchdowns and 2 interceptions and a running touchdown is the fact that Peyton's reeled him in. I'm not saying let him just let him go. But can we loosen it up just a little bit?
Yeah, I think so. In this game, Jameis got 9.8 yards per pass attempt, which is, I mean, you're getting that 10 yards per pass attempt is great. He also had 71% completion percentage. Give me this same game with 5 more passes. He completes 3 or 4 of them. That's another 50 yards. That changes the complete complexity of this game. The only excuse I'll give, and I was last week worried that we were running this offense because Peyton wasn't trusting Jameis. I don't see Peyton as that coach. What I do believe is that Peyton doesn't trust our entire offense right now. If we're running this same crap with Michael Thomas and Traquan Smith healthy on the field, okay, then I'm mad. And I'm asking questions about if we're overthinking this and trying to win too cute.
Okay.
Jameis can throw the ball. If we have receivers that can get open, throw them the ball.
Okay. So there are things too, when people are like, oh, I watched the film and he was open or this guy's open. When you run 4.6 40 and you're being covered by a guy who is one of the better cornerbacks, top 10 corners in the league, Marshawn Lattimore does it. I mean, name every great corner. They baiting the quarterback, please throw it to this guy. And Jameis might just be, and again, I'm not saying it's right. Where I'm going with this is, I agree with the idea that it's not that he doesn't trust Jameis. He doesn't trust the entire offense. So, yeah, okay, let's just say Callaway or even Harris gets open. Does he trust Brock Morton to hold his block or Pete or whoever's playing left tackle for us today or Ruiz? I mean, the only guy that you really trust is the right tackle, Ramchek. So my point is, it's not just, oh, I don't trust Jameis. Maybe he doesn't also trust the receivers to get open consistently. And then does he trust if they do get open that there won't be some, I mean, listen, after week 2, you cannot look at that and say, oh, they got the protection. You know, Jameis just has to make a good throw. Heath, I think there's a question in there somewhere. Why don't you just throw something on top of it, man? You know where I'm going with this.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. And I think, you know, Wesley hit the key point is that it's a combination. It's not just Winston. It's the receiver. It's the line, like you just said. It's also a tight end position. Both, you know, and not just from a receiving standpoint, but from a blocking standpoint. Right now, yeah. If he tries to send a tight end in to help that offensive line, you wind up with a hole that comes back. It brings a 50-something-yard touchdown back on Troutman. You know, in other words, outside of Johnson's three touchdown receptions on the season, there's nothing else that's come out of this tight end position at all. I mean, at all.
No. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say I heard something this week. And, you know, man, once guys – and I don't like it because once you become a whipping post – once you start that narrative, the fans, where most of them don't know anything other than, you know, and they read stuff. And next thing you know, whatever someone says, if it catches enough steam, then that's what you are. And so now Troutman is starting to get the reputation of he's just a bust. He's awful. You know, like, look, to me, the guy still needs some development, obviously.
Absolutely.
He's a good blocker. He's an athlete. He can catch it. But, you know, listen, he's not ready yet. He's not there. But the thing that I heard that just cracked me up is before he was bad, now he's point shaving. You know, it wasn't good enough just to play poorly. No, it's a joke.
No,
it wasn't just good enough to play poorly. Now he's taking points off the board. So he's not just not playing good. He's now saying, no, give me them points back. So
everybody that was mad at Jared Cook for having untimely drops and not being a great blocker is sure wishing he was back on the team right now. Instead of Troutman, because Troutman has more drops than catches this year.
Yeah.
And has definitely missed some bad blocks.
Well, and I'm one of them. I wasn't a fan of Cook. And
I think Troutman will be okay, man. This is a guy, you know, from Dayton or whatever. I mean, you know,
expectations might have been too high.
We did with Vinette getting hurt. Vinette's supposed to be our blocking tight end. With Vinette being hurt, we're asking Troutman to do something that Troutman's not supposed to be. I mean, hasn't been able to do well. And then, I mean, luckily Juwan Johnson is kind of playing the Troutman role and doing a good job. But I mean, Troutman, to be fair, is Juwan Johnson will be doing worse at the blocking than Troutman is doing. There's a reason that Juwan Johnson is the one doing the catching.
Blocking at the NFL level for a tight end is the hardest thing for them to get
for
down.
Sure.
You know, in other words,
it's a tough job. And so, I mean,
and the thing last year was just how amazing a blocker he was. And I don't know, and Wesley, you sound like you have some insight, so I don't want to say something that makes me look foolish, but is it really that Troutman can't block, or is it just he had a few drops and hasn't done? Because I never hear he's a bad blocker. What I hear is, he disappeared. They're not throwing the ball. He's not an impact.
So difference, last year, most of his blocking was lined up as like kind of the X receiver, and he was doing his blocking at the second level against cornerbacks and safeties
and maybe
some linebackers.
Yeah.
He is up against the line trying to block defensive linemen this year or bigger linebackers that are blitzing the quarterback, and that's a different thing. And those guys are he's trying to block guys that are 4 inches shorter than him and weigh the same as him last year. This year, he's trying to block guys that are his same height and outweighing by 60 pounds and just as fast as him. It's just – it's blocking's not blocking. Blocking a cornerback or safety is a lot different.
I mean,
he was good at blocking downfield. I mean, same with Traquan Smith. Traquan Smith, great at blocking downfield. You try to get him to line up next to the tackle and pick up a defensive end, he's going to be in trouble.
It's all relative. We had a great conversation. I actually went and sat with Heath and watched the game. I had a great conversation with him. And the thing that I said is, remember when the Raz score right around the draft was the big thing? And it's like, man, this guy is a 4.8 out of 10. But then, we moved him to tight end, and now he's a 9.6. And it's like, just because you change the title of what a guy does, it's like, as a wide receiver, he's only a 4.7. But we changed him to defensive tackle, so now he's amazing.
Yeah, I have the highest RAS score of any center in football.
Right, exactly. So anyway, yeah. I think that let's move on, and I don't know, maybe we should talk about some positive things so that Craig doesn't get mad at us or the Dome Patrol guys get upset with us, or we can move into missed opportunities, bad coaching.
I'll say one more thing about Jameis before
we can do one more thing before we move on.
Well, look, The one thing that I would say that I wish Sean Payton would have done in this game is, you know, we know the expression, go with the hot hand, right? When a running back, when you got multiple running backs and one of them gets on a roll and you stick with it. When a guy is playing as well as Jameis Winston played in this game, well, maybe try a little bit more. You know what I'm saying? In other words, adjust your game plan just a little bit and try just a little bit more.
Okay.
You know, so what, three passes in the fourth quarter or whatever, three or four in the entire fourth quarter.
Yep.
And so it's like, you know, yeah, I get you trying to run the clock. I get it. And for the most part, it, you know, that part of it, well, late in the game, it wasn't working. But in other words, I get the strategy behind it. But we'll get into this. I think Sean Payton, like, got out of wrong side of the bed Sunday, because I think it's more than just that. There were several things in that game that seemed really strange. And so I'm not sure he was Sean Payton Sunday. But
the analogy I had in my head is that Payton saw us up by 11, thought the game was over, went over and turned off the light switch. Was like, okay, that's it. We won this game. And then he wandered around the dark trying to find the light switch to turn the light back on after this game started getting close. And it was just, I don't think he ever got scared enough to be like, oh, wait.
Yeah, the problem is he did the same thing in the Carolina game. Nothing changed for the game plan throughout the game. We never tried to do a single thing different at any point. And I've noticed that so far in this season. It's like, you know, on the one hand, you go, oh, you know, he's learned a little bit of restraint. You know, he's not doing the Sean Payton. But then at the same time, you know, and we'll get into it about going for it on fourth and three and, you know, the challenge, which, you know, I have no idea what that was about. And then there's also another one, do you remember a play? They got a penalty. The tackle had reported eligible and he was covered up.
Yes. And Kamara covered him up.
Okay. Yep. I don't know. Most people realize they went to Sean Payton called the timeout to continue to argue that with the official.
Yes.
Trying to get the official to look at the jumbo screen to see that it wasn't really
he was sitting there the whole time pointing at the jumbo screen. You could see the official shaking his head at him going, I'm not looking at it.
you know, and so that's what I'm talking about. It's like between the blowing the timeout on a stupid challenge, which most of the time you're not going to get a spot challenge like that overturned. That's one of the hardest things for him to overturn, because if you don't have
just a big pile of people.
Right. And then, but it was second down anyway. So what was the difference? You were going to make it third in inches? It's not like it went from third to fourth. It was second down. So nothing about that made any sense, but it really doesn't make any sense when you're pissing away a timeout to try to argue with an official about whether something was a penalty. There has never been a change of a penalty after arguing with a coach or whatever, but like never. You know what I'm saying? There was zero possibility of that working. And Sean Payton knows that. He's been doing this for a long time. They've never had a situation like that. And then they come back and go to, after a discussion during the timeout, the officials have decided to pick the flag up. It has never happened ever. So anyway,
I'm going to, because most of the stuff I have written down here is obviously critical, I'm going to go to some positive stuff. I heard Curtis Johnson on WWL say that, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he thinks that both Smith and Thomas look ready. I was a little nervous because I read a tweet from Thomas, and everything he tweets is somewhat cryptic. Yeah, I think that's the word I actually was looking for. And so he just said, I can't remember, was it be patient or
yeah, something like that.
More like worry about the let's be concerned about the future. And both of them to me meant I ain't coming back right away. And so, but Curtis Johnson says it looks like both of them's ready. During the broadcast, they brought up the little and it was like, oh, here's all the Saints injured players. And Vilma said that Coach Payton told him, and I'm paraphrasing this completely, that all these guys will be back after the bye. So some positive news, all the stuff I talked about at the open, and we shouldn't think we're going to blow anybody out. Well, you know, when you get those seven guys back, all of a sudden blowouts seem like they can be a little bit more, you know, palatable, like more probable, especially if you play in a team that's not that good. Although by the time the bye week's over, when you look at our schedule,
we're playing good teams.
It's starting to look tougher than it did in the offseason. That's fun. But having said that, by the time we get to week 10, it won't be as tough anymore because this guy's injured and that guy is injured. So I don't know, but that to me is good news. I feel like I'm gonna go, and Wesley, I'm to me, the biggest thing is you get, I know Smith is a beaten, you know, likes, everybody likes to beat him up, but he's a good receiver and he's better than anything else. Well, I tell you what, Harris is developing, but the problem is his size. I don't know if he can ever be a number one, but when you put Thomas and Smith on the field, then all of a sudden you rolling coverages to those guys. And now Harris, I am looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah. So, I mean, Traquan Smith, they had him on video from the sideline saying 2 weeks, I'll be back in 2 weeks. So I'm not sure even if he's ready, again, we need him to be actually healthy. We brought him back in the preseason. Everybody remembers he came back for two or three practices and then now has been gone since then.
So I probably think it was one practice, but anyway.
whenever we're ready for him, let's wait another week, especially right. Washington. I mean, yeah, let's just make sure.
Well, the way Curtis Johnson spoke is that that's
is it exactly both of them it. Are yeah
ready. So I don't know why they're not playing.
It's gonna be time to go. One thing interesting with a couple things with receivers you're talking about. So Deontay Harris only played 33 snaps in this game, 49% of our offensive snaps. He had 8 targets and 5 catches.
Right.
And I mean that's getting open, and he might be our only guy getting open.
Consistently.
And this other thing, consistently, right. And this other thing that kind of was surprising, this first part sounds like a negative. It's not. I'm just bringing up a whole positive. So Alvin Kamara had no targets in this game, which I don't like, but I think we can have some excuses about Tony Jones Jr. getting hurt and Kamara's role changed a little bit of how it normally would. But we targeted 10 different receivers in this game, had 9 of them had catches. It would have been 10 if the Kenny Stills catch would have caught, would have actually counted. But targeted 10 different receivers in this game and 9 had catches. That's a rare, weird thing when you're talking about, you know, Ty Montgomery and Chris Hogan and Dwayne Washington and Kenny Stills and Tony Jones Jr. and Callaway and Juwan Johnson being your receivers. 9 of them having catches is pretty crazy. And again, this is, I think I brought this up a few weeks ago. This starts making me think we always talked about that being the greatness of Drew Brees, getting all these nobodies to catches. Brees is gone, and this is still happening. I mean, this is something that Peyton does well, and he's doing as good as a job as he can right now, considering that we really don't have a number one receiver on the team.
Right, scheming it up. Heath.
You bring Thomas and Smith back, though. This is, I think, that really changes that dynamic.
Was it you who said it? Or yeah, I believe it was you, and I couldn't agree more. I know it was 15 minutes ago. But if those guys come back and we're still doing the same thing, because here's the other thing. Tony Jones Jr. goes down. Kamara, listen, man, I maybe he can prove me wrong, but I mean, I don't know if I even want him to be taking as much of a beating as he's taken now. He's too valuable as a multi-purpose back to be just slamming him up there. And I mean, look, he's producing, but is that what we want? And let me add another layer so you can, I mean, can we consider the way Taysom's been running? Could he play some running back, or do you bring Ty Montgomery back there? What do we do with this running back situation?
Well, no, we don't want Kamara to run the ball that much. And I think this was his career high, 26 rushes or whatever this week was his career high.
Only the 400-yard game of his career, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Well, it and part of the reason for that is only the second game of his career that he didn't have a reception.
Right.
So totally strange as far as, you know, a game goes as far as Kamara. But, yeah, we don't want him – carrying the ball that much. I guess Tony Jones got hurt and he's been playing well, but that was part of the reason why, you know, people like, we ought to get rid of Murray and everything. You know, that was the role that Murray played, right? Murray take more of that beating, running those in there and into line and between the tackles and stuff. And then let Kamara do what he does, the outside stuff, the receptions, it looks like we've worked some running backs out. So
saw that
as far as what we're going to do, I don't think we'd really necessarily line Taysom Hill up as, I mean, I'm sure he'll get plays like that where he'll take the handoff out of a jet sweep type situation, or, you know, he'll come in at quarterback and run the occasional run off a right tackle or so.
So Wesley, I want to see what you think about the possibility, because Taysom has lined up as a running back and handed ball. Does this mean more quarterback snaps? And one thing I want to point out when watching the film this morning is we joke about it being off the right side. And I think I know why they run it almost exclusively right, because they pull the left guard, which is Andres Pete. As much issues as we have with Andres, he's a good athlete. I don't know if Throckmorton has the same ability to get over to run that same play left. So that could be why they only run it to the right at this point.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's a Taysom fumbles with his left hand, so he has to like carry it to the right side of the field or something. I mean,
gonna hang
it's
on.
Weird
to that,
though. It's really weird though that they just keep running to the right side. I mean, and not even like sweeping, like to the right guard. Like it's over and over again. It's a and no, I Lord, I hope that this does not mean more Taysom Hill snaps. And I don't know why we would expect different, because again, even though it was a diminished Drew Brees, we watched this happen over the last few years with one of the greatest quarterbacks in NFL history. That's also beyond even when his skills were diminishing, was trusted more than any quarterback in NFL history by his head coach. Peyton believed in Brees. And so if he was taking him off the field, I guess I feel, looking back, stupid to think that he was going to do it less. And even when it's not working, I feel, I guess, stupid to assume that he's going to start doing it less, because even when it was not working last year, he didn't do it less. And so, I mean, I don't know. I am frustrated that and now we got the excuse today about the foot couldn't be planted and he stumbled he threw the intercept. No, that's the exact same pass that he threw all the time. He did not anticipate the receiver being open. He waited too long and then he threw it 5 yards short or 10 yards short. This is no different than every other pass over 12 yards that he's thrown in his career. But I don't
know. You know what? I could still throw in the big leagues, and I'd probably throw over 100 if my back foot didn't drag on the ground. Really? I mean, I could give you excuses for everything. At the end of the day, I don't want to hear it. We talk about trusting Drew Brees. You know why we trusted him? Because when he dropped back the pass, he didn't accidentally drag his foot and throw an interception.
And this is probably dumb considering that Taysom had 2 touchdowns in the game. So, like, I mean, again, I don't know if somebody else doesn't also get those touchdowns. I mean, it's just.
Okay, look, both of those runs were beastly. Now, I don't think anyone would argue that Kamara could have those same type of runs, maybe not necessarily run over people, but we've seen him get out of stuff where you're like, oh, okay, we got through a 4-5. Oh my God, touchdown. And he could do that. Having said that, again, it goes back to, in many games in the NFL, you see a running back get 25 carries and it's like, oh, I'm going to start him next week on fantasy. And then he only gets like 8 carries or 12 carries, but then he gets, you know, 6 receptions or whatever. The point is that coaches manage, and Peyton's talked about it. There are different game plans. There are different, not game plans, different ways. And that's not what he said, to win each game, right? And so this game might be, oh, we think that we can beat them because their linebackers are slow, so we're going to run this kind of offense, and we're not going to run as much. But to me, it seems like every game's like, okay, what's the game plan? Run it. Okay, this team's a little different. They have a better run defense. They're starting left corners out, and they're starting safeties out. What's the plan, coach? Run it. He cannot take that beating. And now you take our second best running back out. I don't know what you do. Are you still just holding your water until those guys come back? If you see what I'm saying, is that the game plan can't be like, I know everybody keeps saying Washington's defense has been playing poorly, but it's still the same. You know, you got Hurst who's going to be trying to block Chase. You can't tell me that we're not going to struggle running the ball next week. I would be amazed if we are able to run the ball the way we ran against the Giants. And when we talk about open receivers, okay, were they open because we were running the ball so effectively? What happens when we're not running the ball effectively? Those receivers going to be open? I guess I have so many opinions. I'm not asking a lot of questions here. But Heath, I mean, Taysom, run the ball more. I'm not talking about throwing it, but does he line up as a running back, or do the Saints give him more snaps as a quarterback and let him get more carries?
I think the Saints are going to bring somebody else in, and then I think it'll be, you know, I don't know that Taysom Hill's – I don't think his role is really going to change that much because Tony Jones Jr. got hurt. They still got Washington. I think they will probably – assuming – I don't know now. Have you guys heard – I saw at least some speculation, somebody saying that they think Tony Jones might be out for the season. Have you all heard anything like that at all?
I haven't seen anything.
So I don't, you know, but
the,
if it
the
is
five guys they brought in today, though, makes me think that, and there's a couple of names in those five guys they brought in today that are interesting.
Right. Yeah. That's why, you know, and so that along with what I had read, you know, makes me believe that they're probably, you know, they're going to bring somebody in. And so I ultimately, I don't know that Hill's role will change any because of that. And, you know, I'll leave it at that with Hill. We could beat that to death, but.
Well, you kind of already jumped into it, Heath, and I don't want to get you fired up again. but okay. So the next thing I'm going to talk about is bad coaching decisions. I had it written down, but you already went to it. So the things off the top of my head, the decision to kick. Listen, I know it's not Rujas. What is it? It's Rosas. Rosas.
Is former New Orleans Saint.
Yes. Oh, okay. Well, break the news. Break the news, sorry. Wesley.
We have Aldrick Rosas is no longer with the New Orleans Saints. Cody Parkey is signed as to the active roster as a kicker for the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah. And he's the guy, if you remember, in the playoffs with the Bears.
You're going to bring up something positive, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, nobody's ever done it. The only kicker in NFL history. Okay. I don't know if that's true. I'm just making that up, but he kicked the ball and it hit the left upright, the center, the middle beam and the left upright. But then it didn't go in. I mean, I think he's the only person. I'm gonna have to look at my almanac and find out if that's true.
I don't know.
Rumors had it that he's a Saints fan and did that on purpose, Dave.
Nice. Just
bringing that up. Not sure if anybody's ever.
I find it funny coming out of this that Rosas is the one that took the fall for that. You know, it's like he was the sacrificial. We lined him up for a 58 yarder, that bastard. You know, he's the whole reason we lost this damn game. You know, it's like, I mean, really, why didn't you give him a chance to kick the 47 yarder?
No. That cracks me up because I was like, people are talking bad about, I swear to God, Saints fans, you could go out there and we talk about injuries and suspensions and coaches being out and everybody will talk about it. It'd be like, man, our running back, he had his left foot amputated and has a artificial right leg and his hands are gone. But then when he fumbles, he'd be like, oh, that he ain't no good. Yeah. And that's a terrible analogy. That wasn't even. I was trying to be funny. Terrible. But my point being is you can have every real excuse in the world. But if you don't do, if you don't perform, it don't matter. And Rojas or whatever his name is, he's the guy who used to kick for the Saints last week. let's kick a 58 yarder, miss it. You got to go. They should have cut him last week. I mean, that was.
You were going to cut him.
The 37 or whatever he made. That's the one that really, you know, the
got me.
53
yes.
And 58. What is. I realize the percentages have gotten better on over 50-yard field goals these days, but it's still not a high percentage.
The 53-yarder was into a terrible wind, too. Belichick won that game, or at least the coaching aspect, by calling the timeout and making us kick into the wind at the end of the first quarter.
Right.
You know, Heath, you can help me, too. Like, I'm not a rocket surgeon, but if we had kicked a 47-yard field goal and – instead of being tied 21-21 at the end of regulation, would we have won the game with three more points?
I think so. I think that's how it works. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I think I remember that from trigonometry. But look, I mean, the bottom line is, I'm going to have to assume now, considering that they threw him under the bus today, that Sean Payton's going to tell you he went for it on 4th-and-3 because he figured this guy could hit a field goal. I mean, it's like, would be, why did you come into this game with him still as your kicker, right? Because, I don't know.
One thing I'll give Payton credit for, after the game, he said, we made bad decisions on the field goals. Like, so he admitted that both of those were bad decisions. And I mean, and again, you can't go back, but both of those being different probably affects the outcome of a game that goes to overtime.
He passed on the first 58-yard possibility by punting the ball. So.
We were going to kick the 61-yarder, but decided to go for it on fourth down, you know, because we have no confidence in our kicker. But I thought the same thing. It's like, he needed to go, but I'm like, dude, come in here. If you don't make this 58-yarder and then you got to go. It's like, oh, damn, man. Can you let me get that 47? Nah, 58 or nothing, buddy. And so they toss his ass out. All right. So Heath, I mean, you already brought up the challenge on the spot on second down. Very, best case scenario, you get the bonus third and inches, quarterback sneak. The chances of you stopping that play is next to nothing.
And I just don't understand it, right? I mean, it's like, in other words, it really, at that point in the game, considering everything, we're in the lead. It's a second down play. The Giants are still pretty deep into their own, you know, I'll say, whatever, around a 30-yard line or so, if I remember correctly. You know, what was the point? I don't really understand at that point in the game what he was thinking at all. Now, you know, as far as the whole Peyton thing overall, I have to give credit to this. What's his name? Matt Moscona. I saw him on YouTube earlier, and you know, he does some pretty good rants, and I usually get a kick out of watching his rant segments. But he brought up a good point, and I was thinking this too, right? Sometimes Peyton just seems to get in this funk or something, like, but I think Moscona explained it better. It's, you know, we talk about it, we call, you know, Petty Peyton, right? Everybody calls him Petty. It's almost like at times Peyton gets like a petulant child or something, or spiteful, or I don't know what it is, but like when you wind up making a challenge like that, when you wind up calling the tight end and arguing with the officials over whether it was really an illegal formation or not, when you're going for it on fourth and three, instead of kicking a 47-yard field goal, stuff like that just makes, that's what I said earlier about it. It's almost like Peyton just came into this game and like just an off mindset or something Sunday. I'm not sure what it was, but there was just way too many of those things all in one game.
Yeah, I really think I likened it to the game last year against the Broncos, where it was just like the extreme of, there is no way for this team to beat us unless we're just idiots. So we're going to go out there and go be really, really boring and just come out and we're just going to win the game at the end of it. I felt like he obviously didn't go to that extreme, but I feel like he was like, you know, we don't have the receivers to get fancy, and this isn't that good of a team, and we'll be at home, and it'll be emotional Superdome. And I just thought that, and then when they get up by 11, he's like, okay, we've done enough that we are going to be able to hold on here. And then just never turned it back on when the game started getting closer and closer. And I agree with you, Heath. It's this weird mixture of, he's, as far as offense and defense and just all around, one of the two or three best coaches in the NFL. Yeah. But he will sometimes make emotional mistakes, and he will. And I'm not saying it's a mistake to be petty, because I like petty, but he will get petty.
Yeah.
Okay. So the last one that I thought of, and we've already talked about, thanks, Heath, is Taysom Hill's. They bring him again. Winston throws a touchdown and gets called back. Then you bring Taysom in. And so my first inclination, I can maybe see the logic where I think this falls into the too cute category. What do we always say happens when a team, now we have Jameis Winston. What's that going to do? Defenses have to respect the long ball. When you get beat deep, what generally happens to defensive backs? They start, giving you a little bit more cushion. And so then do they think that when they bring Taysom Hill in, they're like, they're going to totally be thinking we're going to run the ball, so let's take a deep shot? Because I defended it by saying, or I defended Peyton. I said, Peyton didn't tell him to throw that ball to underthrow it on another deep ball. But having said that, it was a shot. It was a shot play. It's the same one that Harris runs all the time, runs effectively. And it's the same one. Again, I'm repeating what you guys say earlier, is it's the same one that he's underthrown several times. Did he just outsmart himself, or was it just that he got dragged? He drug his back foot.
Most important thing you said, Dave, is that Winston has already thrown this pass successfully to Stills and Harris and Callaway multiple times this season, in the preseason and the regular season, and a couple times in this game. Let Jameis Winston throw it. It's not like we had attempted a couple of long passes that got covered up. Winston had completed a couple and had just completed one to Stills that got called back. Why does Taysom need to be the guy that throws that ball? We didn't need the trick play to get those guys open. They were getting open just running down the field.
Right.
It's like one surprise wouldn't have been enough, right? You could line up again and have Jameis throw deep again, and that would probably have surprised the other team already.
As much.
No, we're going to do the double surprise, and we're going to bring in Hill, but we're going to throw deep again. But the point is that, you know, as Sean Payton, he's got to know that the odds of Hill throwing that ball successfully are pretty low, or at least, you know, or Hill is completely different player in practice that none of the rest of us are watching than what he is in a game.
You're making the point. The way that play works is if it completely confuses the defense and the guy's all by himself running down the field.
Yeah.
Taysom Hill is not an accurate enough thrower to throw that ball if the guy's covered. So right. Taysom needs to look up and go, oh, there's a guy with him. I'm going to tuck the ball and run. Or the only way that play works is, I mean, is again, the guy being completely wide open. Taysom, the only way I think he can hit it.
Well, okay. So another thing that I had here was missed opportunities. I don't think I'm going to go there. I'm going to stay away from that. And if I stay away from that, what else do we have to talk about? So, oh, okay. This is kind of Paulson Adebo is having a great season for a rookie, but I don't think there's any way to avoid saying that he just got lit up. And I noticed watching the game this afternoon that he struggles on crossing routes, routes that cross the field as opposed to, you know, his side of the field. And I don't want to say deep balls, but I listen, and Coach Payton said on the coaching show, I'm not going to, you know, make quick decisions on guys who've played really well because they had a bad game. Heath, you got Roby on the bench. What do you do?
Yeah. Well, I think at some point in the game, I would have changed things up. Now, whether that would have been to bring Roby in, you know, sit Adebo down and bring Roby in, not necessarily, right? The Saints don't do a lot of moving guys around. Like the Saints have never in their backfield said, Lattimore, you're going to stay on the best guy all game long. So you, wherever Galladay goes, you go. Right. That's not generally not what the Saints do. And so that was more along my line of thinking is that I may have changed up. Well, number one, you know, I think they play too much zone. Yep. I'm not sure why the decision was made in this game to all of a sudden go away from being the highest man coverage team in the NFL or whatever to playing a lot of zone. And those were the zone plays were ones that pretty much bit him in the ass every time. So that was my first thought was I'm just not sure why we're running the defensive scheme that we're running right now, because early in the game, we were shutting the Giants down. I mean, we started out the Giants first four or five possessions or whatever. They didn't do anything. And in fact, the game should have been the first three possessions that we had was the punt after getting within their we lived in their territory early in this game. Yep. And should have had way more. We had 0 points at that point, but we should have had points already. And the Giants weren't doing anything. And then all of a sudden the Giants kind of got it going and we're playing the zone. And then like, we didn't really change anything. And to me, it just felt like on defense, you know, it felt like the Giants just wanted it more. I'm looking at two teams playing and I'm like, the Giants are out there making it happen. They just want it. And I'm not really sure what's happening with the defense. You know, yeah, Adebo didn't have a great game to get back to Adebo. He did not have a great game this game. You know what? He's a rookie in his third or fourth game or whatever. Okay, surprise, surprise. He didn't have a great game playing against 6'4 Galladay, who happens to be a pretty good receiver. You know what I'm saying? So, another thing is I'm not sure. I hope the Saints don't do this. We all came into the game going, oh, they don't have Slayton, and they don't have Sterling Shepard, and they don't have – well, they got – this kid, Tony, is pretty damn good, you know? And so between him and Galladay, there were plenty enough to wreck. And then, of course, Ross, the speedster, you know, that used to be with the Bengals, but who opened it up with the long touchdown. But it's like, I'm not sure what to say about the defense, dude. I really don't. Daniel Jones had a good day. That's something else I can say about it, right? He's a guy that's gotten beat up a lot because he was the first, you know, high pick and everything, and he didn't have a lot of starting experience when he came out of college. And the guy's pretty damn good, and he had a really good day yesterday. And in rewatching some of the plays, the Saints had more of a pass rush than I initially thought. I came away from the game going, man, we just didn't get, you know. Daniel Jones had to move a lot in this game. The problem is he was effective in doing it. He was able to run, move around just enough to get a pass off and complete it and all. So I saw earlier today, I won't mention who, there was an online publication that basically the headline was, it's time to bench Paulson Adebo. Now, of course, they proceeded to contradict themselves in the very second paragraph because they said, this ain't on Adebo. The Saints coaches have to put him in the best position to succeed. So it's like, if it's the coach's fault, then why would you be calling for him to be benched anyway? But that actually brings up 2 points. Yes, he didn't have a great game. No, I don't think he should automatically be benched for it. But then the other part is the other side of it. Did the Saints coaching staff, defensive coaching staff, actually put him in the best position to succeed in this game? And I don't think so.
Well, one of the things that you brought up and is something that I was going to say, another observation of mine. Now, this one is less scientific because generally my opinions are scientific. But Adebo is a bigger guy. And while he has, you know, good measurables, when you're that big, it's really hard to cover these super fast. And I feel like sometimes, especially in this game where he kept being singled up on just really fast guys. And so Wesley, I think he nails it on the head with, you got to put the guy in a position to win. He mentioned, you don't often have guys follow receivers around, but at the end of the day, if you keep matching up Harris on Adebo, Adebo's going to have a hard time with that.
Yeah. Ross and Tony, with their quick hips and able to change direction, is probably the worst kind of guys for Adebo to be on. Like you're saying, he's a longer guy. He's not going to have the fluid back and forth hips that some of those guys. Also, I mean, Heath makes a good point. Like some of the plays that get credited to Adebo giving up a catch were, one, we were either in zone or Adebo and somebody else, Adebo switched and the other person didn't, or vice versa. In the overtime catch to Galladay, Adebo switched, Gardner Johnson didn't. And so it looks like one of them was playing man and one of them was playing zone on that play. Who knows who was wrong? And also, to be fair, I mean, yes, Adebo is a rookie, had probably his worst game so far in the NFL. This year, I think Lattimore and C.J. Gardner-Johnson just had their two worst games of the year on Sunday as well.
Yeah.
Lattimore was out of place on a few things. The Giants set him up perfectly on the Barkley touchdown. They ran that play earlier, and he played it well when he tried to jump on it there. And I mean, they made him look foolish, something that he normally doesn't do. So, I mean, there's a few things that are interesting as far as that. I think we'll add another DeMario Davis. I think had his worst game of the year too. He had a couple of missed tackles, which he normally doesn't do there in overtime. He had a chance to hit Barkley for a loss on the touchdown. There's a few people looking there.
I'm trying to think of Jenkins. It's usually a sure tackler in overtime. Misses a pretty big tackle that gives up a lot of yards.
We're talking about Roby. Roby looks like he jumped ahead of PJ Williams. He had Roby had 18 snaps in this game, or 18 passing snaps. And he looked great when we were in the dime package. I think he might maybe got credited with giving up one catch for a couple of yards, but you didn't hear his name called or you didn't have him pointed out a lot at the game. So there's a chance that you could see, I mean, Roby playing and that not really being just a total downer on Adebo. I mean, Debo's a rookie. Let's let him,
watch. I guess I'm going to – I have this note and I'm just sitting there because we're talking about Adebo. And to me, the most frustrating thing about if I'm talking about Adebo is, he gave up this long pass and it wasn't a touchdown pass. He did a good job of recovering, gets his hands in there. And then who was it? Was it Williams? Yeah, it was Williams who strips the ball out. The ball's rolling around in the end zone, and Adebo just kind of pops up, and I don't know what he's doing. He's mad about something, and whatever, but it wasn't jumping on the ball, and that's one of my missed opportunities. The other one was in overtime, and, God, I'm just thinking about this, and it gets frustrating, is the Barkley has a fumble. And it wasn't one of those fumbles where he's going to the ground, he fumbles it and grabs it back. I mean, it's rolling all over the field.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even close. The Saints had no one around the ball that you would have said, God, if we could have just got to that. There was no Saints around anywhere, and that was frustrating to me. And also, says something. Now, I'm not going to get too deep in it, but golly, good defenses. That ball hits the ground. There's four defenders falling on it, you know, and it just seems like I don't know what was going on, and it was a little frustrating. So those two plays, that and Lattimore, I think this was kind of went under the – until I saw it again on the replay, Lattimore undercut the tight end and should have intercepted a ball. It ended up being 3 points for the Giants, but he should have intercepted the ball. And it's just sometimes it's like when things are going your way, you make two of the three of those plays. When things aren't going your way, you get 0 of 3, and that's what happened to us. So I'm going to – let's talk a little bit the Redskins. I don't think the Redskins – I think it's going to be the same type of game. I think that the Redskins, I know everyone keeps saying their defense is not playing as well, but I'm sorry. For whatever reason, I believe that defense is going to show up and it's going to put pressure. It's going to be a tough game. But the positive of it, so let's talk Washington and where this has us, the bye week. The Saints win 3-2 into the bye week. I don't think anybody going into the season would be upset getting a huge amount of impact players back after the bye. I think it's a crucial game if we want to try to get one of those playoff spots. Let's go, Wesley, go ahead.
Yeah, I think this is a game where we can't screw around and keep this game close. I have been a denier for the first couple of weeks about the Redskins defense because it was scary good last year. But this is a team that gave up the last three games 29 points to the Giants, 43 to the Bills, and 30 to the Falcons. The Falcons and Giants have not been good teams this year in general as far as the way they play. Now, the Bills, they're a scary offense.
Yeah.
43 points on anybody makes sense. I mean, again, it'll be classic Saints for them to all of a sudden gain their defensive, testicular fortitude for this game and just all that. But we're 4 weeks into the season now, 25% of the way. Teams are starting to become what they are, besides the injuries that I think you're dealing with the Saints. This isn't that good of a team that we're fixing to play. And I know we said that last week. Hopefully there's going to be a lesson learned from the Giants game, which is if you are getting up and you're winning, like not to take our foot off the brake. And maybe there's going to be something that, the defense is a little more honed in and focused, realizing that we can lose to bad teams if we don't play well right now.
So Heath, you think it's important for us to not take our foot off the brake?
Yeah,
you did me already, so yeah. I don't hear nothing, Wesley.
Yeah, I think that was everybody's benchmark, right? You said it is that you got to be at least 3-2 going into the bye. I didn't expect it to come down to the at Washington game to it's a big missed opportunity to have gotten a win at home against a team like the Giants this past week. So now you got to go to Washington. Washington won yesterday, right? Didn't they come back in that game, if I remember correctly?
They beat the Falcons 34-30.
Yeah, okay. You alluded to it a second ago. Teams have a way of getting right against the Saints. I'm not sure what it is, but if that defense is going to show up, it'll be next week when the Saints get there. And then, they got a guy playing quarterback is the kind of guy that gives the Saints problems, right? Heineke or whatever the hell you said. And I like this guy. I love to watch this dude play. I don't know what it is about this guy, but I really like to watch him play. And he's the kind of guy that could give the Saints fits. So the Saints have got to get their mind right. Now the DAA is trying to help us out. They've gone in there and busted down and raided the facilities and maybe took all the pills away and they won't be on whatever they've been on lately.
Right. And maybe 12 coaches will get arrested, for a week.
Yeah. We don't know exactly where this is going yet. Maybe some of them will be, they'll be have racketeering charges or something or whatever they've been doing, but hopefully it's a distraction, right? It's likely to be a distraction heading into the game when your head trainer got hauled off by the DAA. Well, I guess he didn't literally get hauled off, but the point is he's out, he's suspended, and it's going to cause some distraction to the team. Saints need to take advantage of all of that. They need to get their head screwed on straight. Hopefully Sean Payton is ready to play ready to coach an error-free game next week. They got to go get this win. You can't let a second opportunity in a row against a lesser team pass you by and then go into the bye at 2-3, because then even with everybody coming back and all, this is the same thing that used to happen to the Saints in the 7-9 seasons and all, right? They would fall in a hole early. They would spend all season trying to come back and everything, and then they'd peter out at the end of the year or whatever. And so I don't want to, you know, they gotta win this damn game next week and get the 3-2 going in a bye. And I'll feel okay coming out of that after a week off with a bunch of players coming back.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's the whole key to it is the players coming back. That's the key. You got to find a way to hold this out, hold the fort down until these guys get back. So as Wesley would say, you can lead a horse to water, but two in the bush is better than one in the hand. So anyway, for Heath Elson-Son and Wesley Coleman, this is Dave Romero. You've been listening to the BS and Beer podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.
And anyway, the person who sits here is but the most conspicuous member of a superb team of journalists, writers, reporters, editors, producers, and none of that will change. Furthermore, I'm not going away. I'll be back, and that's the way it is.
Oh, boy, don't waste time to tune into our podcast. Oh, go give your time to David, Heath, and Thomas. We do this every week, every Wednesday. So don't miss, we do this every week, every Wednesday. So don't miss, we have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. Oh, we have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast, too. Oh, boy, don't waste time.